Good morning. Welcome to this session, this keynote session, on making historical recordings available. Making historical recordings available is what ARSC is all about, isn't it? I mean, making historical recordings available is what we as ARSC members do. Whatever our responsibilities in service to our sound archives, you know, whether we, you know, collect, conserve, transfer, catalog, manage, I mean, whatever we do, our actions ultimately result in playing historical recordings for those who can contextualize, interpret, and integrate them into cultural and human narratives, and people who want to listen to them for fun. So it's only fitting that our keynote presentation this morning focuses on this most central shared endeavor. 2 days ago, the Library of Congress made more than 10,000 recordings available via its newly launched National Jukebox. This morning, we'll get a guided tour of the website from some of the folks most responsible for its realization. We will see how scholars might approach this incredible new resource to better understand music, culture, and media. And we'll hear some fun and fascinating performances from more than a century past. U.S. copyright law grants owners of sound recordings the exclusive privilege of commercializing their creations. Unfortunately, the code needlessly restricts our use of best practices to preserve the recordings in our care and play them for others. Now, as most of you know, ARSC is leading the way to sensible, practical, and responsible copyright reform. Reform that allows us to do our jobs while protecting the interests of the recording's owners. And that's where we begin today. Here with a brief update are Tim Brooks, chair of ARSC's Copyright and Fair Use Committee, and Eric Harbison, chair of the Music Library Association's Legislation Committee. Tim?
All right, I'm going to give you a brief update on what we've been doing, what the organization's been doing on your behalf in copyright reform and in Washington, an interesting place, I will tell you. And Eric represents the MLA, which has been our close partner in this. And we'd be glad to take questions at the end if you have them. I want to keep in mind, and make sure we all keep in mind as we do this, what our goals are here. They're about preservation and access. They're about facilitating those by making copyright law make it possible for us, and in fact encouraging us to preserve using best practices and have access to, which is kind of a dirty word in some areas, to historical recordings. So whatever happens at the end, whatever kind of changes in the law we are able to get, or other things that happen that facilitate those two things, preservation and access, that's the goal. In a negotiation, you never forget what your ultimate goal is, and don't get distracted by intermediate battles along the way. Until we do that at the federal level, however, nothing really matters because, as you probably know, most early recordings, everything prior to 1972, is locked up under state law right now. So we've got to first, and have made our first goal, to bring pre-1972 recordings under federal law so that we can get fair use, we can get a public domain, we can get preservation provisions that in fact apply to the recordings that matter the most. Okay, what's happened? Briefly, the events so far is that in the spring of 2008, ARSC hired a lobbyist for the first time in its history, and not for very long because lobbyists are expensive. We gave him three goals. First of all, introduce this issue that we have about the state of early recordings under the law to Washington, and also introduce ARSC to Washington, to the decision makers in Washington, which means Congress. Second, find out if there was any reasonable chance of changing the law, or is this a fool's errand? And third, if there was a chance, develop a strategy going forward to how over time we might accomplish this. None of these things had ever been done before. What we found, in a nutshell, was that, first of all, no one in Congress was aware of the problem. Even the so-called copyright experts, like Representative Boucher, for example, were surprised to learn about some of these provisions because their focus had not been there and nobody had told them about it. They had questions. They wanted to know what other stakeholders thought about it, but they were open to hearing more. That was news. Secondly, the issue was nonpartisan. This has nothing to do with the Democrats and the Republicans and whoever, the Tea Party or whoever else is fighting with each other this year. It's not a partisan issue. And third, the RIAA, the representative of the record industry, didn't want this issue on the table. They didn't want to talk about it. They did not respond to reporters who asked them, what's your position on pre-72 recordings? What's your position on preservation? They didn't want to talk about it. And they had successfully kept it off the table, which is why Congress didn't know anything about it, for many, many years. So in late 2008 and 2009, as a first step, we sought, this was a lot of work in one line, what happened over here anyway? Well, we're having a problem with our video. Well, what does it matter? The same words I'm talking about. We obtained endorsements from 8 other organizations, so that's not just ours doing this. And we formed a coalition called the Historical Recording Coalition with the MLA, our first partner in that, and the Society for American Music, and more recently the Popular Culture Association, to provide some ongoing support for this. In March of 2009, first big breakthrough, we got language inserted into a funding bill which mandated the Copyright Office had to open an inquiry on this issue, which they obviously had never done before. So everybody was going to have to go on the record for the first time. The wheels turned slowly in Washington, but last November 2010, the study was launched by the Copyright Office. The first deadline they gave us was January of this year, in which all interested parties had to submit their positions on this, including the RIA. We did, and MLA did as well, with detailed position papers on it, creating a public record for the first time. 59 of these papers and positions were submitted to the Copyright Office. And the Library of Congress submitted its position supporting our proposal. In fact, most of the proposal, though the submissions, supported this idea, with the notable exception of the RIA, which opposed it and raised many legal objections to it, which caught us a little bit by surprise. The second deadline was in April, when we had the opportunity, everybody did, to respond to those initial submissions. We engaged a lawyer, a young intellectual property lawyer by the name of Shannon Sen, who wrote for us a detailed legal rebuttal of the claims of the RIAA, which were paper thin, to say the least. And that's the first time that's ever been on the record as well. So that's all on the record, as are those of the other organizations. They're all available for you. There's a website at the... I don't know if you can see it or not. Probably not. But there's a website, technology. There's a copyright.gov website where all of these are posted, and you can see them all. And I think we have started by creating a record which has not existed in the past about this issue and where people who are trying to defend it, how they can defend it, and the people who are saying this needs to be changed are laying out in some detail, as Congress can understand, how, in fact, it can be changed. So what's next? The next slide would have said coming up. The next thing is that early June, next month, there will be a roundtable in Washington where parties can come and talk about this with the Copyright Office by invitation. We will be there, clearly, as will the MLA, as will the other interested parties. By the end of this year, 2011, we expect the Copyright Office to issue its report to Congress. And then starting next year, in 2012, with that record and with those recommendations, we work on Congress to start doing something about this. Congress, I should emphasize to you, has requested these reports. So it's not something that's coming out of the blue to them. They may not remember that they requested them, but they did. And in addition, they have also asked the Library of Congress and the National Recording Preservation Board to look into this for several years now. A number of very important reports have come out of that, including one authored by our own Sam Berlowski, who you'll hear from shortly, which have laid down a record for Congress per its instructions, which pretty clearly say that there's a problem here and Congress needs to address this. That's the answer they're going to get. And it's up to anybody who opposes it to oppose all of that and make a convincing argument of why you should not listen to all these experts, which is not going to be easy. Our feeling is that the RIA and other parties of that kind, they didn't want this fight in the first place. They know it's an uphill one. They've got other priorities that are far more important to them than this is. They may make a deal or do something else that will make the situation better rather than have to slug this out. There is now, unlike 5 or 10 years ago, a large and growing body of evidence, which we didn't never had before, about what the situation is with historical recordings and how preservation is so hindered by the laws. I think simply creating that record is something that ARSC has done that is a very good thing for our industry. I should mention that in addition to the members of the Copyright Committee, Sam Berlofsky and David Soibert, both past presidents of ARSC, have been instrumental in helping us plot our strategy in this area and how we go forward in it. We took an issue that was buried for many years and which obviously the industry lobbyists did not want to have raised and brought it front and center and, by the way, have raised ARSC's own visibility in Washington quite a bit. We have learned that the RIAA, whatever you feel, and the record industry doesn't own Congress, and Congress doesn't like the feeling that it's owned by somebody. Nobody else, no other voices are there, they'll get their way. But if other voices are there, they'll deal. And we are going to need allies in this. They may come from the musicians industry, which has a lot to say about records that are kept out of print and they make no money from. From the electronics companies, which want more open information and data. There are other natural allies out there that can help us in this, and some have already. And we, as I've said many times before, are going to need time. I mentioned 2012. Congress doesn't do anything in even-numbered years, if you know, because those are election years. In odd-numbered years, you can actually get some things passed, however, because they're not quite ready to, you know, go to gridlock as they do every two. So 2013 may be more realistic in terms of that. The success may take many forms. It could be the obvious changes in the law we want. It could also be other things that make allow preservationists to preserve and scholars to access these recordings. For example, the model you might have from the EMI Trust in England, where a major record company has turned over a lot of its material to a nonprofit, its early material to a nonprofit trust, rather than fight through these issues, which they don't make any money on anyway. But there are a lot of ways that this can play out, all of which get to those two goals that I talked about. Your support has made a lot of difference in this. It's allowed us to hire that lobbyist who introduced us to Washington and helped us plot our strategy. It's the lawyer that we needed to counter the RIA's legal claims, which on paper look impressive, but when you dig into them are, as I say, pretty thin. So you need some money for this kind of thing, and the support of the membership has been very helpful in that. And finally, we've been told from the start, the get-go, how impossible all of this would be, how powerful the entrenched forces were in Washington, how we should give up, how we shouldn't try too hard or expect too much. But in 3 years, I got to tell you, with your help and your contributions, ARSC has moved this issue farther along than anybody thought was going to be possible. There's still a lot to do, and I'm sure going forward you're going to hear people say the same thing. Yeah, be careful. Don't ask for too much. They're very powerful down there, to which I say baloney. Those who proceed in fear guarantee their own failure. And you'd be surprised what small groups of people who've got their facts together, not just their arm waving, and have got a convincing case, how much effect they can have, even in Washington. So we've only begun to fight this battle, and we've made some good progress so far, and I look forward to making more. And I would say, in closing, when the final slide was going to be, there is a petition online at recordingcopyright.org, which is the website of the coalition, which you can go and sign up for and just put your name that, you know, I support this. If you want to say something, if you want to be anonymous, you can do that. But don't forget to look at that coalition website and the sign petition button on it if you'd like to sign up for that. Now, as I mentioned, our partner in all of this from the get-go has been the Music Library Association. They obviously have a stake in this as well. Eric Harbison is the chair of the Legislation Committee, and he's going to bring you greetings from MLA and some perspective on their side of this. Thank you.
So I don't have slides, so there aren't slides that you can't see. First of all, I wanted to thank Tim for inviting me to come out and address you all. It's really an honor, and I have to say I am truly in awe of the absolutely relentless attention that you all have brought to this issue. It's really, I hope that you realize what a remarkable thing it is that you all have brought this issue to where it is now. It's not an easy thing to do. Tim especially deserves a great deal of credit for that. So I want to please, yes. So I just want to thank you all for leading this charge, because it's obviously a very important issue and one that music libraries care a great deal about. I wanted to talk a little bit about one of the concepts that Tim mentioned just now is this idea, I don't have slides.
No, keep on going.
Oh, okay. This idea that we're going to need allies in to get this through Congress. Now, as difficult as it has been to get here, to get to this point of getting a report commissioned from the Copyright Office, this is going to be the easy part. Getting something getting a report out of Congress out of the Copyright Office is the easy part. Getting actual legislation through Congress is going to be a bit harder. And this is not to say that it can't be done. I absolutely think that it can, but we're not going to be able to do this by ourselves. So, one of the issues that's going to come up, though, is that all of these different stakeholders are going to take a little bit different approach to the issue, and it will be a good idea for us to collaborate even more as we kind of plot out our strategy for getting this through Congress. For example, the MLA has been very supportive of this coalition. We joined it as soon as we heard about it, and we're very excited about it. But even the Music Library Association and ARSC each submitted comments to the Copyright Office, and there were some differences even between us. For example, one of the questions was on what is the ideal term limit for post-1923, pre-1972 sound recordings. In ARSC's comments, clearly one of the five pillars of the coalition's goals is a 50-year copyright term to go to kind of harmonize with the Europeans' neighboring rights concept. One place in the call for comments where ARSC said, well, we should have a 50-year copyright term. The MLA said, well, you know, we looked at what a book from pre-1972 would have a copyright, and we said that, well, that would be a 95-year copyright term, which many of us think is far too long, but we thought, well, the logical term for that might be 95 years. So what we did was we suggested that there's a provision in the copyright law that's specifically for libraries, and there's a little used section of that. It's section 108H, if any of you are curious, which gives books and other copyrighted materials in the last 20 years of their copyright term considerably more freedom. It gives libraries considerably more freedom to exploit those works, not just for copying, but also for performing and display and other distribution and the like. So we said, well, maybe a good compromise would be to, for sound recordings, have Section 108H apply to the last 45 years of a copyright term. So you have a 95-year copyright term, subtract 45 years, and so everyone has the full 50 years. But after 50 years, if the copyright holder isn't exploiting it fully, then there are these other provisions. Now, we were obviously focusing very specifically on library concerns because that's what we are, that's what we're supposed to be doing. We also endorsed ARSC's position, but it would be a good idea for us to kind of do some more talking so that when we go to Congress, we can have a single voice. And I think that we're making, I mean, the coalition website is definitely helping with that. Another place where there might be disagreement is in this question of partial incorporation, which is, should the law apply if we with we if we recall Section 301C, which is this provision that excludes pre-1972 sound recordings, should the if we don't just repeal this section, what about having exceptions that apply specifically to certain classes of users? Like, and the one that's usually talked about is, what if we allow Section 108 to apply to pre-1972 recordings, but not anything else? And this is a case where MLA was very adamant that even though this would certainly benefit us a little bit, we really did not feel that this is a good idea for a number of reasons, one of which is that it would be impossibly messy and probably unconstitutional, but also that we rely heavily on the uses that non-librarians put to these sound recordings. And to the extent that it's legally possible under federal law, we really want you all to be able to keep doing the good work that you're doing. So, and more work, ideally. So this is another place where we did say, you know, if we had partial incorporation, it would help a little bit, but we really would rather not have to go that way. And then the ARSC, of course, was very adamantly opposed to the idea of partial incorporation. But the key here is that when we're looking for more allies, we're going to get more of these little slightly divergent points of view, and we're going to need to take, we may need to spend even more time talking and formulating our message. For example, so the American Library Association and the Association of Research Libraries and the Association of College and Research Libraries, which is known as the Library Copyright Alliance, had been planning to sign on to the Music Library Association's initial comments. We had sent them copies of the comments. They said, yes, we're in favor of this. We passed this resolution once upon a time that said we support the Copyright Office going through and having this this study. And literally at the 11th hour, it was 11 o'clock in the morning, and I was going to submit them at noon. I learned that the LCA had decided actually they don't want to sign on to our comments, which was a disappointment. And the reason that they were concerned, this was Tim's, you know, being afraid of what could happen, and there is a lot that could happen. They were very much concerned about the idea of opening up the Copyright Act and possibly inviting in all kinds of other even worse legislation. Some of the legislation that's been passed, copyright legislation that's been passed recently, has been awful. Some of the copyright legislation that's on the table right now is worse. There were the Combating Online Internet Copyright Act, or COICA, which was narrowly defeated last term, was terrible. It involved seizing domain names without even, I mean, just, it was very bad. So, so they're very concerned about the possibility that we might bring in more worse legislation. And they were suggesting, well, maybe the Copyright Office could just say, what if fair use, we say fair use definitely applies to pre-1972 sound recordings in all the 50 states. That was one of the things that they were hoping for. We're going to need to work with the ALA and their colleagues in order to get this through. We're going to need to bring them on board. They're very powerful players. They have professional lobbyists, and we're going to need to work to get them on board. Also, the Special Libraries Association would be good to have on board. The Society of American Archivists is on board. But we're going to need to find where these differences that we have are. We're going to need to make a singular message. So I think that we can bring the ALA on board. I think we can bring these other people on board, but we're going to need to work on it. Finally, I wanted to mention a couple of cases that are on the periphery of this that might be interesting to watch. The first is the case of Golan versus Holder, which is before the Supreme Court this coming season. And that is one, that is a case that the recording industry cited as something that could possibly, that's an example of how messy all of this could be and might be used against our mission. However, if Golan is decided in the right way, it could actually help our goals. So it's worth following that. The other thing is this case of Penguin versus Buddha, which was recently decided by the Second Circuit, where a case that was an infringement that happened in Oregon was tried in the state of New York because the person in Oregon had put the material online, and so the court reasoned, well, if it's on the internet, then the harm could happen in any 50 state, and Penguin is based in New York. So the American Buddha has to defend itself in New York law. Now, in this particular case of our pre-1972 sound recordings, where we have 50 state laws that we have to worry about, this is obviously a very important problem, and this is a reason why we really need to get this legislation through, because we can't worry about 50 different state laws. It's just it would make things even worse than they already are. So I want to thank you all for letting me speak. I'm sorry for droning on for so long. The last thing I want to say is that for when we go to the roundtable in June, we're going to need stories, actual stories of projects that happened or did not happen because of this particular law. Or lack of law, I suppose. If you have an example of something that you wanted to do but couldn't, or did but didn't do the way you wanted to do it because of the way the law is right now, I urge you to either talk to me. I'm easy to spot, even though I don't have my name tag. I have cards. You can come talk to me after the session. Please talk to Tim. But get us your stories, because that is what's missing in this discussion, and I know that this is what the Copyright Office is going to be looking for. So thank you very much.
We have a couple of minutes if anyone has questions in this area. Eric and I would be glad to try to address them. I know you say questions about copyright, and eyes start to roll and go up into the back of the head.
There's someone in the back over the left.
The left?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Go ahead, Mike.
What extent will the Chen decision regarding Google Books and settlement and orphan works make a difference for us when we go to Congress? Because that's the other big issue that's in front of the courts right now.
So what difference will this make for orphan works? I'll take it, and then you can take it as well if you'd like. Orphan works has been introduced twice, I believe, in Congress. Actually did pass the Senate the last time. There are advocates of it on both sides of the aisle in Congress. It's hung up on photographers right now, but they're working on a way to make them happy. So I think, and we can see what Eric thinks, but the idea, the Orphan Works legislation is likely in some form eventually to pass. Now, of course, under the present situation, it wouldn't apply to any pre-72 recordings because it's federal law. So that's one of the reasons why we're trying to get this and even tie it together. I think a lot of congressmen don't know that. That happens often. Nancy Sinatra testified on Congress about how unfair it was, and she wasn't making money from her older recordings. Not knowing that if she got the law that she was advocating, since her hits were in the 60s, it wouldn't matter. It's under New York state law, Nancy, not under federal law that they told you to come down here and support. So all of this stuff, not only Orphan Works, which I think is likely, 108 preservation reform, which there's a report on too, and which has got to be worked on, but and is further away, but could happen. It's got some juice behind it. That wouldn't apply either. So what's the point of preserving 1973 recordings, but you can't preserve 1971 recordings because of this silliness? So that's why we think this is such an important part of it. And once we bring it in those terms, that is, these things you're considering, like orphan works, you realize they're not going to apply unless you address this other thing that the Copyright Office and Library of Congress and all these organizations are telling you, you ought to do something about this.
Is this on? Yes. So I don't think that the Chen decision especially is going to have a particular impact on this case, because as Tim said, it's currently not talking about federal law. And also, the Google Books thing isn't over yet. As far as I know, I haven't heard yet that Google has decided what they're going to do, or the Authors Guild. So we don't know really, are they going to try and craft another settlement? Are they going to try and appeal? Are they going to just give up? We don't know. But if the if Google decides to that they can't do this because they don't have orphan works legislation, because they can't craft a settlement, they're going to be very powerful people on the Hill trying to get orphan works legislation. If the pre-1972 legislation goes through, what this will do is create a whole new class of orphan works. So it will be imperative that we solve this. It could happen at the same time, depending on what the timing is. But at the moment, I don't think that this particular Second Circuit decision is likely to have an impact on it, except in the sense that it's saying you can't settle your way into an orphan works bill. So,
one more question. Yes, Steve.
Day before yesterday, I saw an announcement concurrent with the Library of Congress project that Google is about to introduce a system like iTunes, but they're not planning to pay the copyright owners. Now, I'm not quite sure reading the article, the further down you got, the muzzier it got as to what the rationale.
Yeah, well, I actually have some contacts in Google, and we've talked to them about that. They haven't made up their mind yet. For Google to give up is not Google's DNA. They tend to be rather aggressive, to say the least. And they are certainly a potential ally. That gets back to the allies thing. ARSC, your society, now has contacts and people to talk to in a lot of associations that we didn't have a few years ago because of this. We don't have really any in the CES, in the Consumer Electronics Society, which is another powerful player. If anybody can hook us up with them, that would be great. But yes, to your point, I've got no shame about jumping on somebody else's train if it's heading where we want to head. And if Google takes this on, we'll be riding. Maybe in the caboose, but we'll be riding. Thank you.